In today's Tech for Business podcast, we're serving up a conversation so packed with insights, we had to split it into two parts. This first episode digs into the heart of an incident response plan. You'll discover why having a clear, well-tested plan is non-negotiable, how to master escalation paths and communication strategies, and what to watch for so potential threats don't catch you off guard. It's a must-listen for any business that wants to build resilience and handle incidents like a pro without breaking a sweat.
We've been discussing the St. Paul cyber attack, the SonicWall vulnerability. So today, Todd, our COO and CISO, and Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, are here to talk about incident response. We're finally diving into this topic that is coming up very recently in the news. I want to ask you both, what is your top non-negotiable for a plan? Like for a high quality, good incident response plan.
I assume that means the plan exists.
Yes.
Okay.
You were saying the plan exists, the perfect plan, and you have for sure this one non-negotiable.
Yeah, I was going to say non-negotiable, the plan actually exists in the first place because that is actually something that isn't always common.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the podcast itself was just kind of like, what is incident response? And that's great. But to me, the non-negotiable was going to be, there has to be a plan. But assuming that there is, the one piece that I'd say for me would be the non-negotiable is escalation paths. Mm. So what happens when you get stuck? What happens when you have questions? What happens when you need to have decisions made? That type of thing.
For sure.
It can make that broader, but we'll start there.
Yeah.
Stop that. There's two that I really want. As part of the incident response plan, I would say the person who is authorized to take the reins on the incident.
Mm-hmm.
People typically might think that that is your CEO. That's probably not the right person to take charge of an incident. It might be your technical person, right? We can come to that in a little bit, but clear delineation of who gets to supersede any decisions in that critical incident. Important. And then just to make sure I get my second one, I will say the communication plan is a separate policy that's tangentially related to it. So that way I can at least say both. But your communication can make or break a security incident in the first place as well.
Yeah.
We expand on this now since we're going down this path, or do we? I think Nate and I are on the same path, which probably isn't a surprise for anybody that's listening, but the one that kind of follows it is, since he got to do two, I get to do two, and mine was, it's the same thing he's saying, but it's largely what does communication look like? And to me, that includes and gets slightly further down the path of what does it look like when I'm communicating to and from legal, as well as the external communication. So he got two, I got two, and now I feel better.
Of course. Gotta be fair.
Yeah, I'll start talking a little bit about preparation. So for anyone that doesn't know, you know, the defined playbook of incident response is generally well-structured, right? And so you start at preparation, then you identify the incident, you contain the threat, you eradicate whoever's in the environment, and then you recover from it, and then you do lessons learned. That is well-established. Mm-hmm. There's even a, you know, a NIST standard on this as well. So it's funny, though, because when you're in the heat of the incident, that structure completely goes out the window unless you have the fortitude to stand by it. Because there is a common saying that we have during incident response is slow is smooth and smooth is fast, right? And so people usually want to jump the gun and just fix things. And that's when bigger issues coming down the pipeline. But in terms of preparation, though, is if you go look at previous cybersecurity incidents of other companies, their communication either completely makes or breaks the trust that individuals have with them. So I will go pick on some that may not do so well, and then others that do quite well. So if I remember correctly, you know, things like the Equifax or Change Healthcare, you know, these massive national data breaches, when they see their compromises, right, is sometimes the responses are a bit vague at first. Like, we don't quite have the full scope. Probably the latest thing that we start to see, you know, I don't know if this is driven from more of the legal at the moment, is they'll say a sophisticated threat actor, right? They kind of put in the term sophisticated, which oftentimes mm-hmm. it's the, you had a low level vulnerability that was open, or you didn't have multi-factor enabled. It didn't require any sophistication to get into your network, but the language coming out is all about that. There's other companies where they try and defer some of the blame a little bit of, this is one of our vendors, even though they are ultimately responsible for the access into their network. So when you try and kind of wash the situation away, it actually looks really bad when you do it. So there's companies that have done it very well. So one of them is Verkada. So I think this is back in 2021. They were notified that someone was gaining access to their environment. So Verkada, there was a hacktivist that did not like the broad scale surveillance within the United States, got into their environment, told a news reporter told the FBI and Verkada that someone was able to get into their environment. They instantly locked it down. And within the first day, they said, there's an incident that we are aware of. We are currently investigating. And then I think it was within a day, they gave a full detailed summary report of, here's everything and here's what they were able to get access to. We've engaged in a third party forensics firm, all that type of stuff. They created webinars with their CEO and CISO to answer any questions. The way that all the communication flowed in, they gathered tickets. So any requests that customers did have, they would follow up with later on. Had a full website illustrating all the different security incidents or, updates, and directed everyone to that. And then also put in a full 100-day plan. And this is stuff where it built trust, saying, yeah, everyone is going to have a security incident at some point, right? The common saying is, it's not if, it's when. But they handled that extremely well. It's a great model to look at if you're trying to build out your own preparation and communication guidelines.
There are so many different kinds of incidents. How are you even starting this process with all the different possibilities or all the different avenues that this could take? How do you make sure that you stay adaptable to different situations? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a great question. As you're doing prep, I mean, one of the larger things, and Nate alluded to this, is you do need to figure out who you're going to have as part of your escalations path or who's included and whatnot. As we get engaged with most organizations, that tends to be pretty light early on. There tends to be obviously you bring in your CEO and then you've got your tech resources. And almost always with every organization, there's the one person that seems to be responsible for everything. And so when you ask them questions, who does this? That's always, it's Nate, which is great. It's a great first step. So you just start to build the plan around that. And really what we're trying to do, as you said it already, is we're trying to make it as flexible as possible so it can adapt to most things. So Nate kind of highlighted it. There is a very sound structure that goes into the plan overall. And so if you can build it the first time and you make it somewhat flexible, more often than not, it tends to be able to be flexed into all the other types of scenarios. But at its core, what you really want to do is you want to get very specific step-by-step processes in place. You know, for example, I used this in the past too, but it's, the concept is, in case of fire break glass, you need something super clear. This is what you do. Step one, you contact your cybersecurity insurance organization. Step two, you inform the CEO that's going on. That's what you're looking for. And again, most of that type of functionality tends to be very clear, but it's also very flexible. That doesn't matter if it was ransomware or business email compromise or something else. The same steps are typically pretty straightforward in the beginning. Much later, as you start to get into the weeds and it starts to get technical, that's when you start to dial it in a bit more.
Yeah, you'll never be able to classify every single cybersecurity incident or, type, because it's always changing. Mm-hmm. And what you can typically do is you take those and put them in buckets, right? This is a system intrusion. This is a account compromise. This is a data exposure incident. Now, where it comes from or the specifics of that incident may change, and each one could have a slightly different response. But to Todd's point is that's a little bit down the maturity path, and you would typically start a bit general, right? You can always mature your plans. You don't want right. to get, Todd, you'll say it better, I'll probably screw it up, but the done is better than perfect because perfect is never done, right? And so if you get lost in the weeds of your incident response plan and you never get it finalized to even know where to start, you don't have an incident response plan, right?
Yeah, the other reality is more often than not when an incident starts to happen, you don't have those details. So Nate's kind of talking about a sophisticated type of attack or whatever. More often than not, until you really get pretty far into it, you don't know exactly what happened or how it impacted or how deep the scenario goes. And so if you're trying to get all of those minutiae in place, you're just really going to slow yourself down. So that is a great saying from my perspective is, just getting something done doesn't need to be perfect. Just getting something in place is so much better than having nothing and trying to work for perfection. Because I think another military phrase is that nothing survives first contact. So that plan, no need for it to be perfect because it's not going to be.
Yeah. Two more things. Just because we could spend a whole podcast just
mission
phase. I mean, it is that critical.
Yes.
Two more things about your incident response plan. Is have a quick reference table, right? So if your incident response plan is a 14-page document full of paragraphs, I can tell you right now, the first thing someone is going to do is not read it. There's too much detail when you're in the moment of, you know, high stress, lack of sleep, lack of food, all that type of stuff. You will not read those paragraphs. You need to be able to look at and say, who is in my call matrix? What's my war room communication, out-of-band communication? Who am I contacting? Who are my legal contacts and all that type of stuff? Tables are key for that. The other thing, Todd had mentioned it before, is Nate does this, Nate does that, Nate does this. Who's the backup, right, when something fails? So one of our favorite tabletop exercises is, great, Nate's on vacation and you still had a security incident. One of my favorite ones is Nate had some bad lunch. He's out for the rest of the afternoon, right? It happens, unfortunately, right? And so there's a common saying on our team is a process that relies on a single person is a broken process. You need some type of resiliency when your primary contact is out of the office or unavailable, right? They may be in a meeting or something along those lines. But never have critical business processes tied to a single person. So,
yeah, there's a couple of really good, I'm sorry, I'm just jumping on that real quick. There's a couple of really good reasons for it. Is things do happen, right? Emergencies happen. People go on vacations. It's our thing. Sometimes you're out to sea, you don't have access. I know there's Wi-Fi, but it still ends up being problematic from time to time. But more importantly than that is that everybody should know what's going on. It shouldn't just be reliant on one person. You know, Nate kind of mentioned this, and I mentioned it too, is more often than not when we start working with organizations, it's you know, it's Nate. And I say, okay, great, Nate's on vacation. They go, yep, but Nate answers the phone call when he's on vacation. I'm like, okay, great, now he's out to sea and he can't pick up the call. Now what are you going to do? And they're like, oh, well, gosh, our plan does stink, doesn't it? So the comment Nate had is it's absolutely broken if you're one person that knows and cares is not available.
Yep.
For sure. Let's kind of move into this identification. Like an incident happens and we could probably get into the weeds of different kinds of incidents and what indicators. We can definitely have that conversation. But my question is going to wrap back to this communication part that you brought up, Nate, is how do you make sure that you are communicating either with your internally or externally when you don't have all the information yet?
Yeah. So when you first identify that there's a security incident, I'm going to put a step zero in here first, and then I'll circle back to your question.
Yep.
Step zero, whenever we engage in any security incident, the first thing out of our team's mouths, you know, there's a question, do you have cybersecurity insurance? If so, contact them now to be able to start that. The second question is, did you eat some lunch today, right? If the answer is no, okay, after you contact your insurance, step out. We will get started on the back end, but go get some lunch. Tell your family or call your family and let them know you're probably going to be late tonight. So you cannot operate on a cybersecurity incident with a lack of food. That's going to fuel your brain. And again, your social life might not be non-existent for the next 24 to 48 hours. So even my team, right, is before you get deep into the weeds, you're probably going to be sitting at your desk for the next 8 hours. Get a snack, hit the restroom, tell your family you're going to be late. Let's help out the customer. So step zero, you got to do that. Now we're talking about, I don't have all the info. What do I start doing, right? Mm-hmm. Is two things. Never use the word breach or hacked. There's legal connotations to those depending on your industry. Everything is a incident, right? We are actively investigating. And the big thing is we don't talk about assumptions. I don't assume that data has been lost. I don't assume my network has been down. I don't assume that there's a ransom note and a ransom demand. Is when people start asking you, is there an update? It's under active investigation, right? We don't have all the details yet. And so we only ever talk about kind of like full-on assurances and attestations. Like, here's the definitive facts that we know of, right? And so if you've never been through this, you know, your legal team, if you have, you know, when you contact your cybersecurity insurance, they will loop in legal counsel, they'll loop in, you know, the incident response firm, maybe your IT provider to be able to assist you with all this stuff. But the official language that will go out is always supposed to run through legal. Mm-hmm. And that's why you often hear the things like the sophisticated threat actors. There's always a common spin to it. Again,
abundance of caution.
Abundance of caution, right? But the big thing I would say, even for internal staff, is do not talk to the media. Do not talk to the customers saying what's actively going on. That's where we start to see the really poor incident response communications come out of play, right? So,
yeah, so kind of expanding on that a little bit, a couple things that come to top of mind for me is the way that you'll typically see a lot of the structure ends up being is if you start to build your plan, this will start to become pretty clear pretty quickly. But there are certain people that absolutely need to be engaged early and often, right? So what that typically looks like, as Nate mentioned, there's kind of a core. There's people that are going to be the ones that are digging into it. So your technical resources, you're going to have somebody as an oversight. I'll just say it's the CISO. You're obviously going to bring in your CEO and so forth. So you're going to have a core. You're going to bring in the people that communicate. Often that's marketing. And you're going to have your core. And then this is the branching that Nate's talking about. When we go through this process, the board needs to be informed. So the CEO is going to take on that responsibility and he's going to work with them. And then you're going to probably bring in your executive team. And your executive team is the one that's going to have the communication back to most of the organization saying, here's how communication is going to move forward. And it's going to include, don't bug the security guys, because every time they have to respond, I'm still looking into it. You just took away 15 minutes of their time and you broke their flow, if you will. And hopefully most people know what flow is, but when you're working, you're in the flow, having it disrupted every 10 minutes is really, really bad. So those kinds of things will start to bake out. It's not critical that you have that in mind as you're starting to build your plan, but as you start having conversations about it, it'll become very, very clear that you need to bake that out. So as an example, we didn't really touch about this too much yet, but after you've built your plan, the only way to make it better is to start to test your plan. And as you do that, we typically do a tabletop exercise as a let's walk through an incident. What happens? One of the things we did fairly early on with at CIT is we did take the executive team through it. And if you're ever curious, this is a really fun exercise for the person that gets to play the dungeon master, because CEOs hate not having all of the information. So you get to keep them at arm's length and say, I don't know yet. It's really good times. But anyways, as you're going through that, you'll see how people mentally work through processes and you go, great, we found a hole here that, you know, I think I said this in another podcast. The sales team is an incredibly helpful group. They want to be the informants. They want to solve problems. They don't have the answers themselves, but they're going to go get them. And so they're going to want to naturally reach out and go, let me get the answer for you. And the answer is, we don't have answers for you. It's going to be something else that we're building in the plan. But those types of things will start to surface very quickly as you start to test how things are going.
You touched a little bit on some like challenges and pitfalls that you see people when they're in this stage are really making. What kind of difficulties are, I'm thinking about smaller businesses who don't have such a robust team. What challenges are they really going to be facing in this stage? Just resource-wise, I guess.
Yeah, the biggest one we typically see is, you know, kind of joked around that one person tends to be responsible. But that usually is it. There is usually at least one person in a smaller business that wears 3-4 different hats. So the person that's leading IT may also be your finance leader, and they may also be doing some operational kinds of things. Again, where you run into the problems there is twofold. One is they may not have the expertise to be the be-all, end-all of everything. And two, again, we can't just have one person be the answer for everything. It's bad enough, as Nate mentioned, to be able to go, hey, I'm going to be gone for the next 8 hours. But if they're carrying everything, it's even more than that.
Yep. I think one of the big things that we see for helping customers with incident response is they have typically been that one person, so they know their network the best. And when a incident response and a forensics firm both come in, you know, through this engagement, and they say, give us full keys to the kingdom, and we are going to do whatever we need to do to, you know, there's other stages that we'll talk about, is, you know, eradicate the threat and get, you know, the network rebuilt. Is when you have basically consultants come in and start just ripping through your network, and, you know, it feels like a very, invasion of privacy almost, you know, like these private, you know, environments. But for all lack of better terms, it is your baby, right, of a network. And someone is coming in saying, well, you're in this situation, we're going to completely redo, or, you know, re-architect or kind of contain, because you got in this incident in the first place, whether or not it was through the fault of that, you know, kind of the IT architecture, you know, but typically the more severe something is, it is a little bit of a result of sometimes poor network planning or poor resources. And we have to come in and kind of redo things. And for the IT administrators that are in this situation, it kind of feels bad, right? Did I do that led to that, right? And so we're not trying to put blame on anyone, but someone got into the network and we have to fix it, right? Emotions are out the window. I can talk about a funny story. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll quick touch on it. In those situations, there's emotions are very interesting. And maybe this is another downfall, is business leaders, it is oftentimes in the small SMB space, is this is maybe your family business, right? It's been in the family for 20, 40 years or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You're emotionally invested into this business. I have had men crying on the other line saying, I think my family's livelihood and legacy is done, right? You jump on a call with the forensics and legal, and it's very much of a, is there an update here? 10-4, right? You know, it's very structured and no one speaks unless, value. And then on the back end, you have the forensics and the incident response firms going, so you guys play any cool video games last night, right? Because this is just nature to us, and we help out and we're not stressed. But those are the people you want helping you, right? Is we are the ones that do this all day, every day. We can come in, actually support you. You know, we are not emotionally invested into this. We typically operate with a clear-headed mind. Okay. So that gets into some conflict when we come into the containment and eradication phases. But emotional, you have to kind of set the emotions away for a second, which is very, very difficult to do. So
thanks for joining us. Next week, Todd and Nate return to continue the discussion, sharing key strategies to help businesses bounce back stronger and smarter. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe. Have a topic you'd like us to cover or want to reach out? Email us at info@citsolutions.net or visit citsolutions.net/podcast. Check back next week for part two. You won't want to miss it.